didn't realise you were intending to. I don't think we'll... Last week we waited for a few people to arrive, and if we had completed the set, we would have been, I think, about 10 to 7 by the time the last one arrived. So we won't do that one this week unless we know somebody's about to get here. Emergency evacuation procedure. Is there anybody that doesn't know it? No, that saves some time. Thank you all. Apologies for absence. Have we got any apologies, Will?
Yes, apologies from Councillor Sanderson, Councillor Aikum and Councillor Gardner.
So we are missing Keane and name's gone. Ed. Yeah. Right, okay. Urgent business. I don't think there's any urgent business I've got that needs to be slotted in, but I hope you'll forgive me if we get to the end and there's something that had a place to slot in and I'm left with it, in which case we'll find that we've got something. But there's nothing major whatsoever. Declarations of interest. Has anybody any declarations of interest? Minutes. Oh, I'm flying. I'm going too quick. Yes, sorry about that. Minutes of the last meeting. Before I sign those, there is a small modification, and that is in the difference between calling it in, and it's minute 83, back to the Thornton Road Industrial Estate. I think there was some confusion, and there was certainly confusion in the full council, between that we were calling it in because we disagreed with the decision, or we were calling it in because it wasn't going to full council. So we've added the words, after the chairman of scrutiny had called in the decision as he believed, and then add the words, the decision-making process to go from part B to part A, and then the reasons. Because as it stands at the moment, those reasons could be to do with the Thornton Road industrial site, which is what some people took it to when they got it to full council, which caused an interesting 5 minutes of trying to sort it out there. So we need to get those minutes right. With that amendment, I propose the minutes. Have I got a seconder? Thank you, Tim. Now we're now voting. Yes, those in favour. Sorry, I'm trying to catch myself brain up today. Those in favour, or those against?
It's unanimous.
That's unanimous. Yes. Go. Slow down, Jim. Urgent business I've covered. Declarations of interest, which is where I'd got to when I was ground to a halt. Anybody anything to declare? I take that as a no. Referral from Overview and Scrutiny Committee to Full Council, page 7 to 8. I don't believe we have anything to do with that because it has happened and full council has dealt with it. It's not... they didn't debate it, which was disappointing. They just voted on it. And having put in that effort to ask them to consider it properly rather than just rubber stamp it, just to vote on it was very near to rubber stamping, but I don't think it's worth saying or do anything in relation to it. And I don't think we've anything to do with that at all, other than note the report. So can we just note that? Those in favour?
unanimous again.
That's unanimous again. We're now on to the Safer Rydale report on page 9. Angela, would you like to introduce the report?
This is a report on Safer Rydale, and it's really just to note as read, and if you've got any comments or questions for Martin or myself.
Can I ask Martin to introduce himself, because I don't know whether do you know everybody around the room, Martin? Anybody want to introduce themselves, or are they just happy with the names in front of them and work from there? I don't think we'll go around the room doing full introductions. No. Angela, is there anything more you wish to say about this report as it stands before we start getting questions into it?
Nothing at this moment in time.
Lovely. Martin, is there anything you wish to say before we start asking for questions?
No, but I await the questions with interest.
Let me kick off with a background thought in relation to this. And I feel that Angela's new to the role that she's occupying, if I understand correctly. Martin's not new to this sort of role, but new to this role in Rydale. And the whole of the community team is new to this sort of role. And on that basis, I think there is a need to look at it as to what we're doing and why we're doing, because just the one line in the Constitution or whatever it says is that we should receive a report is probably not quite thorough enough. Now, that's no criticism of the report as such, but maybe we ought to look at it. But let's hear what the questions are first. And there's no Jeff to ask a question, which is my automatic direction to turn. Anybody got any questions on this report? Tim?
Thank you. I'm really impressed by the scope, the range of activities to produce a safer Rydale. And different teams producing different strands of the Safer Rydale project. I'm just thoughtful, given that the numbers on the council and police numbers are shrinking, do we have enough people to deliver all of these different strands? And are they listed in priority levels so that 1, 2, and 3 will be done if we can't manage to get right the way down to community events, say?
I'll start by answering in relation to the numbers of staff that we actually have at Rydale in order to fulfil this plan. On the Safer Neighbourhood team themselves, we currently have an establishment which I don't believe has changed in number for a couple of years, and whilst I am aware that there have been communications that officer numbers have shrunk, there has been a reorganisation of officer numbers with a new shift pattern which will go live on the 9th of April, on the 9th of April, which will ensure that each of the shifts at Rydale, and for that Whitby and Scarborough and Fairlie, have a consistent number of officers. And what that will look like is, to all intents and purposes, staff numbers will not shrink at Rydale per shift. Some shifts will be bolstered in that they will rise from 3 to 4. What you'll see is the reorganisation has given a consistent number of officers right across each of the bands that work. In terms of the Safer Neighbourhood team, officer and PCSO numbers, in real terms, have remained the same. We have, when I say real terms, there was always the establishment, and we have been short previously. We are at our establishment now. So that is a figure which has been consistent over the last 3 years. Whether or not all those posts were filled, over the past 2 years they haven't been, if I'm being honest. We are now up to establishment in terms of PCSO and PC numbers. Now, whether those officers and that amounts to, let me get this right, 11 PCSOs and 5 constables, one covering Pickering, one covering Helmsley and Curve Moorside, a constable covering Moulton, one covering Norton, and one covering Rydale South. They are arguably the most experienced collection, the most experienced team I've ever worked with for the amount of time that they've spent in North Yorkshire Police. They are, with the exception of one officer who will start on the 9th of April, they have all spent a considerable amount of time in the Rydale area. They are all local to Rydale. The PC were recruiting to Pickering on the 9th of April, or who will start on the 9th of April, was schooled in Pickering. She lives in Pickering. It follows a theme that we wanted people who had a personal buy-in. You can't replicate the impact of someone's local knowledge and someone's local tie to a particular area. And we've been very particular, or I have, in identifying the right officers for the right area. There are challenges that we face. We're all aware of those. And the obvious one aside, there are changes in the way that North Yorkshire Police has done its business, in the control strategy it has adopted, and certain elements and facets, which I can discuss during this meeting, which are challenges we didn't face 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. They would have been outlandish almost to have considered. But the officers are well trained, they're experienced, and like I say, they've got a knowledge of the area. I'm quite confident that they can deal with the challenges that are faced.
Team. Thank you, Robert.
One particular issue on here, which I think I've raised with you in the past on a number of different kind of hotspots to do with speeding. Obviously we've got the speed management protocol in place, and referrals are made through that. I've made some referrals myself, and I have to say that actually it's quite responsive in terms of getting the data logging kit out onto the streets and the data recorded. My worry is that when that data is recorded, that the options that are available to not only the police but also North Yorkshire County Council in terms of highways and Rydale District Council to a certain extent are pretty limited, to the point where even if you've identified a potential speeding hotspot where mean speeds and 85th percentile speeds or whatever it's called are significantly above what they should be, that sometimes no action can be taken as a result unless there is a history of injury accidents at a location. And I think that's right that we focus our resources where accident hotspots are. But at the same time, if you can identify that speeds are significantly above where they should be, that action should and could be taken in those areas. And my question really is, what options are open beyond kind of traffic calming measures, which are expensive, to either the police or the highways or Rydale District Council to help those issues? And the other issue is how, I believe there's a group which look at all the data, just kind of who is on that group and what do they do when they're considering that data? I had a letter back saying to me, if you're saying we've taken this data, we've decided no action can be taken, if you are dissatisfied, contact your district councillor. And obviously, I don't know what to do. So the fact it says that, I just thought it's worth kind of throwing it out there just to see what can I tell people or what can I do as a councillor to help the issue, basically.
I'll tackle the first of those points in relation to the options that we have for speeding. The census data will give us an indication of whether or not there is an area that is particularly susceptible to offences of speeding. The next stage will be a site visit by one of the safety camera van operators, who will come out and do a series of measurements, take a series of photos and assess its viability to site one of the mobile speed enforcement vans. Now, the difficulty is, because of the legislation, because of the measurements that are required, you need a certain straight stretch of road in order to be able to enforce. And beyond that, we also now have to give tolerances. There's a tolerance beyond the speed limit that, for evidential purposes, when you're presenting in court, the operator has to have... has to form an opinion that someone is speeding. They then pull a trigger. There are then a series of variables from their ability to pull the trigger, the thought process, then pull the trigger fast enough to the point at which the vehicle might have come past the speed limit. So it isn't just a case of, well, you might have 100 metre straight of road. It's 100 metres plus 50 metres plus another 50 metres. And what you find with some of the roads and some of the streets that we're talking about, they don't have that geography or they don't have those features to be able to enforce it with a safety camera van. So we look at other alternatives. They can be deploying a road policing group officer. That is one of the traffic officers that you see. Now, it goes without saying, one of their priorities is ensuring or depriving criminals the use of the road. So their preferable deployment is to try and stop travelling criminality. But they can, nevertheless, we can deploy them to speeding areas because they have different equipment. We can use Community Speed Watch, and I'm sure you'll be aware of that. And if we have 6 volunteers from the locality, then obviously they can conduct enforcement with a series of letters being sent out to offending drivers of increasing severity. What we have also deployed over the past couple of months have been some of the community... The Safer Neighbourhood team have deployed with cameras. Now, a PCSO can provide a statement, but ultimately, because of the nature of speeding, cannot evidence speeding in a court of law to acquire a conviction. It requires a warranted officer. But they can log speeds, they can do vehicle checks, and we have a series of letters in place now where we identify offending drivers and we send them letters. You might think, well, how is a letter going to ensure compliance with speed adherence? But it does, and people react quite well. We've had a letter of thanks by an offending driver who was worried that they might get points. They might even have been on 9 points and faced a ban, perhaps. I don't know, I speculate. But we have deployed PCSOs because we do acknowledge that sometimes we have to be slightly more creative or we have to use what is available to us at the time because we have a finite amount of resources. We have used that within Wellham Road to some success in that we have around 30 letters sent out in a couple of days. And like I said, the feedback we got was relatively positive. And some of that can educate us in terms of the traffic management and traffic calming measures, but ultimately that is the responsibility, I suppose, of highways. But we do deploy vans, even despite the short road spaces I've been discussing and how that frustrates us. We are testing Because, of course, we can't do speed at night. We are looking and trialling equipment that will detect speeding motorists at night. And we do deploy vans, the one in Old Malton, for instance, which isn't there to get detect speeding drivers, but it is for distraction offences, seatbelts, and use of mobile phones. And that is what its specific purpose is, to get distraction offences. So we're trying a series of measures of ascending scale to try and capture some of this. It's worth noting that sending a letter as opposed to sending someone to court tends to be more popular with the community generally. It was described to me, when you go to, if you're caught speeding, you go to court, you feel yourself the victim. If you're sent a letter through the post pointing out the wrongdoing, you can see that you are the one in the wrong. I don't know how that works, I'm not a psychologist. But obviously the community team have supported us in relation to traffic issues, and I don't know if Angela wants to go through those with you as well, Councillor. The traffic, Matthew Lishman's involvement in the traffic panel.
So Matthew's involved with the Safer Roads, so he goes to some of those meetings when he can. And he's also participated with the police on some of those campaigns with the Speak On.
So in terms of the data, who is on the panel who looks at the data that comes back? Right.
The panel does comprise North Yorkshire Fire and Rescue, North Yorkshire Police, North Yorkshire Police Road Policing Group, North Yorkshire Police Traffic Management Group, which is part of our criminal justice team, and they are down as the Traffic Management Bureau. One of the people who is involved in that is a Jamie Smith, and who coordinates the Community Speed Watch. He's been very effective in getting signatories to that. So there is a multi-agency partner approach to it in that respect.
Last quick question is, how many community speed watch groups have we got in Rydale at the moment?
I wish you'd asked me one on sport. I do have the list of the community speed watch groups. I would like, and I can come back to you on that. I would like to say it's four.
It's not zero.
One of the biggest challenges, they need a minimum of six members of the public in order to be trained and in order to have the resilience that someone can deploy with it. And one of the biggest challenges has been their inability to get those numbers in the smaller communities.
Can I ask that you come back to Angela, and then it can come to the committee and round everybody? It's probably the easiest way of handling that, Martin. For the other part of the Norton contingent.
Yes, it is on the same subject, and
we've
had conversations about this. I've been trying to encourage a community group, but it is, it's difficult because people work and it's probably quite a big commitment for them. So I was going to ask about night monitoring. So you've answered that, but I think the biggest problem that I've come up against with this, not just on Mullen Road but in other areas in Norton, is that you guys are doing the very best you can and trying to take action against offenders speeding, but it's when you then try and take it to the next step where people are asking for speed bumps or those Motrix light things with speeds on, and you get to North Yorkshire and it's no, because there is no history of actual injury and collision. But the community, it's the same argument you get from Yorkshire Water about flooding, that if you don't flood then they won't do anything for you. But to me that's the wrong way around. Do you have any influence over encouraging them to do things like speed bumps or the signs to discourage, because it is a big problem on several roads in the area?
I would suggest that we have limited influence. The example being that you may or may not be aware of the traffic light pedestrian crossing in Thorntondale at the bottom of Whitby Gate. And aside from the fact that my wife and children were almost knocked down there, and that was reported as an offence, and I witnessed someone else almost get knocked down, and that was reported to Traffic Management Bureau as this is by the good grace of God, no one's been killed. Mm-hmm. And whether it fell on deaf ears, it certainly didn't change anything. And we had convictions. It made little difference. I wouldn't like to say it would require something significant to happen, but I'm also a pragmatist.
I think the one to add to that, it only took me 7 years campaigning to get the 30 mile an hour speed limit moved out of the middle of Pickering onto the edge of Middleton, i.e. to the edge of the built-up area, and all the reasons that everybody was putting forward, there's been no deaths, there's been no serious accidents, the traffic only travels at 42 miles an hour average, and therefore, you know, we don't need a 30 mile an hour speed limit, and then the hull of the street decided that it was going to pester North Yorkshire Police, the Police and Crime Commission, anybody else that moved, and it appeared to buckle. But that is what you've just said about those traffic lights there, and it isn't one I'd spotted as a dangerous one, but that is the time that it should be happening, when somebody can show and demonstrate. They don't have to have speed cameras everywhere and so on, but if you can demonstrate, and possibly even if you're a police officer, your word maybe ought to have some influence in relation to relation to traffic. For that to be ignored, that really the whole system needs some sort of a change and a shake-up. And all I can say, in this room, a few years ago, it must be 6 or 7 years ago now, this council passed a unanimous request to North Yorkshire Police Authority asking them to use speed cameras to book people that were speeding and to use that money for traffic things. I still think they understand the number of speed traps in yellow boxes in automatic cameras in North Yorkshire is still zero, is it not?
I understand that they are looking at fixed site speed detection devices.
So that at the moment,
they are looking. It is, yeah. And I that was in open source media. That was just in the newspapers.
Yeah. So it's still at the moment, as far as we know, zero. Yes. Well, they've only been looking at it for a few decades, so there's time yet. Janet. And good evening.
From my point of view, I think the fixed cameras are less effective than the ones that move about, because if they move about and you're driving too fast and you don't know where they are, you're more likely to get, you know, somebody.
Yes.
They're more likely to catch people speeding, whereas if you know exactly where that is, you're not going to drive fast through it. Locals and maybe tourists maybe will, because they won't know where it is. But anyway, from my point of view, I think ones that shift around on top of the vans are more effective. But that wasn't what I was going to talk about. when you said you had officers covering various areas, and you said you had Kirby Moorside and Helmsley and not Moulton and various, how do people get? I'm councillor for the Dales ward, which is very all remote areas. And one of the things that people always say is, well, it's no good calling the police because, you know, they're up in Whitby or they're over in Sheffield or somewhere and they don't know where it is and they can't find us anywhere anyway. And by the time they get here, everything will have gone, whatever. They really don't feel as though they have any connection with police. Is there any way they can get in touch with their officer, the officer that's assigned to that area, more quickly? Or get him to whatever the crime's been committed at that time more quickly?
We have a dedicated officer for the Dales area, that being PC Holly Hornsby, and we have a dedicated, at least one dedicated PCSO, Tracy Brown, Tracy Brown has worked the Helmsley and Dales area, Helmsley, Curbmore side and that Dales area in excess of 10 years, albeit recently she'd been in the moved to Moulton area, but she's been moved back to Helmsley and Curbmore side, and Holly Hornsby is very, very well aware of that area. The nature of a beat manager, Holly Hornsby, effectively, she resolves community issues as a problem solver. She doesn't work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. She works largely daylight and evening hours. But she does deal predominantly with any safeguarding issues, any issues surrounding any vulnerability, any neighbour disputes, any issues which are particularly community-based. She is a warranted police officer who will respond to 999 calls, but she might not be the first officer that you see. The first officer that you see is likely to be a response police officer, of which there are four teams, or soon to be four teams, based at Rydale. Their knowledge of the area might not be thorough, in that they may or may not live in Rydale, and they may or may not work here all the time. We do move officers around when there are training abstractions and sickness abstractions and annual leave. I have absolutely no issue providing the contact details for the community team that serves your area. In fact, it is publicised regularly, but I will ensure that you have contact details for that. Within Rydale, we have had a full calendar of mobile surgeries, whereby we have a mobile police office. It's a little Volkswagen minibus that's set out as an office inside, and that has been touring the remote villages and doing a series of villages on the way in. So I know that they've been doing Weaverthorpe and the Luttons, working south and hitting the little villages coming in and stopping for an hour or so in each of the villages, so so the local, more isolated rural communities can approach their police officer. I had asked for that for Northern Rydale, and I do know that they have deployed to some of the villages, certainly west out towards down the A170, and I was assured last week that there was a full schedule of them attending the Loctons, the Levishams, and down the 170, including those villages in the Dales, Sinnington, and so on and so forth. I certainly hope so, because I live in those areas and I want to see my local police officer as well.
I think what their main problem is that if there's something kicking off and they try to ring, they don't feel as though it's responded quickly. You know, they don't feel as though they've got a response quickly enough to catch anybody at it, if you know what I mean.
One of the greatest challenges that we have been traditionally faced, and we continue to face, is we're often defeated by geography. Rydale, as you're undoubtedly aware, is a vast area. We still operate three police stations, although Helmsley is a temporary police station. We do have Pickering and Moulton. But obviously, the finite number of officers we have are drawn to all areas. By example, a lone officer was involved in a public order incident in Pickering, I think the year before last. Backup was at Staxton, and that is because officers were abstracted, taking prisoners to York and Scarborough custody, and even in the middle of the day, with comparatively little demand, if I have suspect vehicles at Hornby, it is likely the nearest responding resources at Moulton, could be at Pickering, but unfortunately it's the geography. We do have targets to meet in terms of our attendance at immediate and priority grades, as do all forces nationally, and we have to try and observe those, but we are trying our best.
So if I'm up Farndale or Bransdale and something's kicking off up there, what would be the quickest way for me to get someone to come and see what's going on? what's my quickest route to get to?
I particularly in this area, if there is a, I always urge against hesitancy if you're wanting to dial 999. A lot of people will refer to the 101. And I'll leave that down to the caller. If you think it's urgent enough, then obviously by all means dial 999. This force operates a policy whereby the nearest officer is sent. So you might be sent an officer from Thirsk. You might be sent a firearms officer. But like I say, it's calling the 999 system and deployment by the nearest resource. And like I say, sometimes that might be Thirsk. Again, you know, if it's a 999 call, they'll come on blue lights. But a blue light run from Moulton to Farndale is likely to be 20-25 minutes. And were they at Pickering, it is almost unavoidable. I can assure you, the officer coming to you is as frustrated with the geography as you will be.
Can I ask another question?
Yeah, please.
I know I'm taking a lot of time up. Have you got your 101 system sorted out? Because at one time, if you rung 101, it was you were hanging on for about 20 minutes, and then I know some people that have actually just given up on it in the end. But that's quite a while ago. You might have has it been sorted out since then?
I understand the Police and Crime Commissioner outlined a £3 million investment into force control rooms. I have a personal experience of 101, which I won't share. It is not, has not been a particularly effective system. It is a national system. And I think nationally, I don't think it has been particularly successful. And it is improving. It has improved over the last 6 months. And it is a question that I am asked at almost every CAP group meeting I go to in relation to 101. I understand it's getting better, and response times in terms of answering calls are getting better, but I don't think it is a finished product, if I'm being honest.
Anybody else? I'm now nervous, Martin, of saying what I think I ought to say at this point, because it's been fascinating listening and the answers, and it's been informative, very much so. But in the report we've got here, it says progress update. And it has, you know, I don't know what it is, 16 columns, all of which are blank. Now, that's a Rydale issue, I guess. But it does mean that when we're looking at domestic abuse and awareness raising, delivering of more and developing whatever, it would be of massively use, I believe, to the council if we were able to look at it and say, this issue is getting more in Rydale, or it's good, it's getting less in Rydale, or the level of incidence is the same, but the outcome is considerably better. Oh dear, it looks as if it's gone slightly the other way. And we were discussing before that we probably might be worth setting up a task group of the chair, vice chair, and a couple of officers to look at this, because a report that's got blank progress update is not what Angela wants, and it's not what anybody wants, but some of those are police numbers and things. A, would you like to deal through Angela as to what is needed, or would you like to be involved in discussing how information can be given to the council for the scrutiny? Because we're a scrutiny committee, and one of our problems is we tend to scrutinise things, and it means that we're interested in how effective something is. And a bit like Janet's question on 101, it'd be quite useful to know that 101 was firing at 32% efficiency, if it was as good as that when I first tried it on that route. And I know, try and find some other way through, and you can't, but you try and find some number of somebody in Scarborough and get into the system somehow. Everybody I've talked to in the last year said, oh, it's much better than it was, which is sort of feedback for you. But those of us who are scrutinising what is going on ought to have something a little bit more accurate than hearsay and whatever, even if it's good in that case, hearsay.
I have been subjected through CAP group meetings and local council associations and the Safer Rydell delivery meeting to an inordinate amount of scrutiny over the last 10
yes.
months. And whilst I wouldn't say it's necessarily been enjoyable, it hasn't been something I shied away from, because there's information that I'm almost duty-bound to share, and there is information that I can collate that will populate those empty columns, and I have populated it, and I can give an update in relation to where it is or how we're performing against the control strategy and the safer neighbourhood, the safer delivery plan. I think some of it comes down, some of the difficulty of it might be lessened by knowing the criteria and the data set you would like me to acquire. For instance, ordinarily I wouldn't tell you the success of 101. But on a minute-by-minute, hour-by-hour basis, my force control room can tell me how many of calls we're answering within the projected times. So I can get that data, but there is an almost infinite amount of data that I can acquire. If I'm given a steer in it, I'll do my best. And I can certainly give you an update now in relation to some of the subjects and some of the progress we've made.
I'm not actually asking for that, because the committee's gone round and asked what they want to know tonight. But the feedback into things and CAP meetings and things are absolutely fine. And part of me would question whether or not Rydell Council's core business covers this at all. Right? The other part of me says, yes, we're community-based and therefore it does. But it was the police authorities that insisted originally, they actually wanted to put somebody permanently onto this committee so that it all was kept looking at an update of what was happening in relation to the police. And some of us argued, and this was massive reductions and cuts all over the place, or early stages of that, to be accurate. I don't think that's what's wanted at all. But I think some of these numbers of a progress report, in relation, you've got this next one, and it would be useful if we had some of them in there. And if some of them says, can't give you this number, it is confidential, then in this meeting we can switch the microphones off and everything else, and you can tell us what you can tell us with the microphone switched off. Or you can say, no, I still can't tell you. But that's better to know what and be able to look at prior to your coming, so that it focuses your questions.
I'm sure all of that is achievable, and there are information sharing agreements in place with the Rydell District Council. Moving forward with our legal department, a lot of those information sharing agreements are being made more uniform with all our multi-agency partners. So supplying with that information is not an issue. It is not an issue. What I will say in relation to the draft delivery plan is that it was is mirrors existing plans from other councils and from other borough councils and community groups. And we can make this is a product of Rydell District Council, and it will reflect what you want it to be. There's no doubt about that, and there'll be no resistance from my Safe and Neighbourhood team in order in supplying you with the information you want.
That's the answer I was expecting you would give, and I'm saying, how do we get from here to populating that?
Actually, once we get the once I'm appraised of what information you would like, the acquiring of that information, that data, isn't a problem. It isn't a problem. We have that in existence, and I could search it. It might take me a few hours. It might take one of my officers slightly less time because they're more of a day.
I don't think any of it is going to be in a rush, but having none at the moment, to me, with a scrutiny hat on, is not enough. And if you haven't been asked for it, none is what we're given. But I think it sounds as though, and I'm going to propose in a second that the chair and vice chair and Rydale's officers look at this issue, and then I think when we discuss what we might need, then Angela comes and talks to you and says, this is what it's looking as though we'll need, and you kick some of them out and agree with hopefully most of them, and then we work from there on it.
Like I say, it's the product of Rydale District Council. It is what you want it to be.
But that sounds sensible in your
chat. And I will respect that, and we have had conversations with some of our peers on this subject, and you've just given clarity.
That's unusual. I normally manage to confuse issues, but in terms of the use of your time, it would seem sensible that we decide what we want before we have discussions with you.
I was also puzzled by the fact that there were gaps on here, but I assumed that this was the priorities for however long that 18-19, and that we would get progress reports at future meetings, Chairman, as we normally do.
Your thinking is the same as mine, but apparently this is what we had last year, and the boxes haven't been filled in the 12 months from then till now, which is why I asked the question that you're asking now, and I'm suggesting that we find some system of filling the boxes in, either at the end of the year or quarterly or whatever system we'd come up with. Were you just head scratching, Keane, or waving? Yes. Yeah, you're just scratching. Oh, that's fine. Anybody have anything else to add before I make a proposal? I'm suggesting that it's in three parts, that we review the context and content, etc., of this report in relation to Safer Rydale partnerships and the Constitution, because I believe there's something in the Constitution, and what that is I know exactly not, but we need to look at it across that thing. Secondly, review the previous year's progress, so we're in 17-18, and then have a sort of dummy run as to what's happened through Martin as to what bringing this year, filling in this form from last year, and it would be very much a dummy run so that we wouldn't be desperately trying to get it all absolutely spot on at this point, and then come up with proposed actions for the 18-19 year to fit in with what you've got here. And do we want further discussion on that, or is that worth seconding or thinking about or what? I think Keane's still scratching his head. I don't think he's indicating. Tim?
Would it be helpful to have, alongside Rydale's figure, what the national average is or the North Yorkshire average is?
I think this is a little bit like the police's figures that go to the area committee, which don't come back to here because there isn't a good link anymore between the area committee. And the area committee is going to get even more interesting because the area committee is no longer going to be in councils, if I understand correctly. The area committee is going to be in constituencies. So you can have a nice think about putting in police figures to fit in with parliamentary constituencies. I think it's a good idea, and I hope somebody's made a note of it, but I think it's sort of column two, if we can get this to work as it is here. I'm trying not to create more work for either officers or the police until we know what we're wanting. And then, yes, I think it may well be worth looking at, but next time round or further down. Anybody else, any thoughts? This is not head-scratching, yes?
The other thing I would say is I feel like Rydale District Council's role is probably best in terms of joining the gaps up between the various different partners. It's not us scrutinising the hard stats of crime, I think perhaps where it can make the biggest difference is by making sure that it's focused not necessarily on getting bogged down in is this up, is that down, on the things that are identified in this report as being key indicators of a safer Rydale that have been identified, and not just general scrutinising of the police, because I don't think this is what this, as the Crime and Disorder Committee or whatever it is that we're called, is here for. I think it's for about joining those dots up and making sure that we're achieving the particular objectives identified. It is not trying to be the police and crime panel. So that would be the only point I would make in terms of trying to populate this with progress as we're going forward.
I think you're spot on there, which is why I threw in the comment in relation to the Constitution, because I have a feeling the Constitution might have been there before the Police and Crime Commissioner. And if it was there before the Police and Crime Commissioner, the committee to which you refer may not have existed, etc. So there may be, and I may be back to, why is Rydale doing it at all, other than the collective safer Rydale bit. But maybe we should be getting the figures in from the Crime and Disorder Panel or the Area Committee or wherever else to be put in alongside. I don't know. That's why I'm suggesting a working party to look into. And if somebody's made a note of what you've just said there, we don't want to be overlapping what somebody else is doing, but we might need their information to feed this. Yes, useful. Anybody other comments? Because this is good. And anybody, obviously, I'll try and let people know, and I'm suggesting Jeff and myself and officers, but if anybody else wants to come along, more than welcome, as usual. So I'll let everybody know when we're meeting to discuss. Any other comments? No? Angela, are you comfortable with that approach?
I'm happy with that approach.
Yeah, and you're keeping out to start off with Martin until we come along and say, how about this lot, and you forget all these words about clarity and go, oh dear me, no, and we start again.
Yeah, I just await your questions with interest, as always.
Yeah. Wonderful stuff. Right, did you get the wording I gave you there, Will, or do you want me to wrap up it again, or...? Right. Is everybody else happy with it, or shall I read it out again? Anybody want me to read it out again? Is a simpler way of asking that. No? In which case, let's go for it as it stands. Those in favour? Those against? Both thereof? Well, quit while you're ahead, I think. Well, the result?
That's unanimous.
Thank you. I'm feeling generous. Would either or both of you like to forego the remainder of overview and scrutiny? I realise that's a sacrifice to make, and get home a little bit earlier than you would if you stayed for the rest of it.
It is very generous, and I'll take you up on it, but unfortunately I'm not going home, I'm going back to work.
Well then, you've got to choose then, haven't you? Sitting here and not enjoying here, or going to work and enjoying it.
I lead my teams from the front, and I think it would be remiss of me if I stayed.
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you very much.
Thank you ever so much, Martin. That's been very useful for you sitting there and just taking questions and anything and everything bombarded at you. Very helpful, and thank you a lot. What time do you finish your shift? I'm not going to ask the obvious follow-up to that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
Good night. Cheers. Right. Item 8, Scrutiny Review's Progress Report, page 21 to 32. Would you like to take us through some of those?
Yes, of course. Just to sort of briefly run through the progress on the current scrutiny review. So the first one, the provision of swimming lessons and the review that's ongoing. The task group agreed to a letter being sent out to both swimming clubs and the council's contractor, and have asked for a response by Monday the 9th of April. That action has been taken on the task group meeting on the 8th of March. In terms of the scrutiny review of the staff survey results, there is currently a staff survey running for staff to share their experience for working for the council in confidence by the 6th of April. This next month. There's not a lot to say really on the flood management review. Work continues on the business case being submitted to the LEP, and I have a meeting with Emily Melaloo coming up shortly just to talk about how we plan to resource the next step in terms of stakeholder engagement. So I'll have more information to report at the next committee on that one. Scrutiny review of assets. The report went to policy resources last week, which will go on to full council on the 12th of April for decision. And then the final review that we wanted to raise this evening is the review of members' involvement in outside bodies and as member champions. And on the report, what I've included there is actually what the resolution from that review actually was back in March 14. And some resolutions have been actioned and several of them haven't. So it was to raise that this evening to discuss as you deem appropriate.
Yes. I think the first one on that list is the swimming one, is it not? I have here, and I was just looking for it while Becky was talking and didn't arrive at, but a copy of an email from everyone active. And it's saying, if I understand correctly, I'll read it. I may skip the odd words if they don't seem necessary. Little surprised and disappointed at the content of your letter. The scrutiny review commenced on the 26th of October and we appear to be back at square one. Hopefully a little more progress has been made than your letter suggests. In order to meet with both clubs, I would require the following information. A, have the clubs agreed to stop their provision of swimming lessons? B, how many pupils do each club currently teach? And what is each club's view on the financial implications of losing this revenue stream? When I have this information, I am more than happy to meet with each club. I would also suggest that as an office of Rydale Council and the club development officer for Swim England North East is also present at the meeting. As you will have noted from the overview and scrutiny meeting the 26th of October, feelings are running high. The delay in resolving this issue means that we enter another financial year without clarity over the provision of swimming lessons. This is putting pressure on the financial performance of the contract. If the clubs require financial assistance in the short or medium term, I feel it is Rydale District Council's responsibility to consider how they can be supported. Has the council considered what support they can offer to the clubs? I will be able to update you on the position by 12 noon, Monday the 9th of April, but from the information I currently have, I think it is unlikely we've reached agreement by then. I look forward to hearing from you. Martin Miles. And a copy of that. Has it gone out to everybody? Have you got one here? You've got one there. Brilliant. Thanks, Will. Well, I'm seeing some interesting body language around the room, but I'm not going to predict what anybody's going to say. Swimming club one in as well, or not? No, sorry. Right, comments, anybody? Thoughts? Go on, Di, you've this.
I think it's a little presumptuous. Frankly, it gives me the impression that their view of the scrutiny review was that we were basically going to tell the clubs what they were going to do, and what they were going to do was to stop providing swimming lessons. I just find it a bit, as I say, a little presumptuous. I'm surprised they don't know how many pupils are taught each week at the pools that they operate. And it's just emphasises the total lack of communication that they've had with the clubs, as far as I'm concerned. Don't know how others feel.
I suppose two points that stand out to me is it states that in order to meet with the clubs, I'd require the following information. And the first one is, have the clubs agreed to stop their provision of swimming lessons? Which suggests... does that mean that they will only meet with the clubs if they've already agreed to stop the swimming lessons? Because if that's the case, it would undermine the objective, which is for the two parties to get together to come to a resolution. And the other piece of the other thing that I wanted to perhaps point out is where was it now? That we're entering another year without clarity over the provision of swimming lessons. And my feeling is that we've got to this year without clarity because of a lack of action by everyone active, not a lack of action by the council. The council is not the person, as far as I can tell, who is there to make a decision or to necessarily... take on the role of everyone active, which is the ball was in their court to make the decision. So those two parts are particularly interesting, and I feel like Di, maybe they've perhaps misunderstood what the role of the council is in terms of the scrutiny review, which is to have a look into what was going on. It was not to apply pressure onto the clubs and make them comply with what everyone active was wanting to achieve. So I don't think that everyone active have done themselves any favour with this letter, to be honest. I'm not sure where we go from here as a result.
Can I just add something in before we get round to me, hopefully, last in commenting, and that is that we are being recorded, and so we have to be just a little bit careful with what we say. That's me reading the body language, not criticising either of the first two speakers. No, I fully understand that. I'm just underlining something because I'd rather it be in open discussion. I don't like exempt, but on the other hand, we are in talking a contract that we have got with everyone active, and we are talking about the results of part of that contract, etc. So we just, I believe, have to be careful. David. Do you agree with the two previous two speakers? Sorry? I didn't hear them. Janet?
Well, all you can say about this is it's a complete impasse. Where do we go from here? I don't understand why everyone active didn't have all this tied up in their contract to start with. What were they playing at? This should have been tied up in the original contract, and it obviously wasn't. It wasn't worded correctly, or it wasn't worded efficiently enough.
Sorry, Jack, I missed your last sentence.
Well, this should have been tied up in the original contract, and if it wasn't, their contract wasn't worded correctly, or it wasn't worded efficiently enough.
We're getting very near there to me thinking we should go into exempt. Can we try a minute longer, and if not, then we will move into exempt. But and that's not a criticism, Janet. I'm just saying we have to be careful.
Well,
Tim, sorry, Janet. Had you finished? Have you finished?
I am just thinking, Chair, maybe it would be best if you feel it for us to do that, to move into exempt, if you feel it's going to prejudice how the remainder of our scrutiny review.
Yeah, I think so. Neither do I, but I don't like curtailing what people are saying, but I don't like moving things into exempt, but we are discussing the contract, which is why I sort of raised an eyebrow, Janet, and I want to hear completely what you have to say. So in which case, can I propose that we move into exempt? If that's the correct
thing. Should we do the other items first and then come back to that at the end?
Would that be easier for you technically?
It would be, yeah.
Yes. Finish the whole of the agenda and then come back to this one. Yes. Okay. So, having found that piece of paper, I'll now be capable of losing it again before we get there. The next report was which, after the swimming? You've got a sentence there on the staff survey. I don't think there's anything more to be said on that.
Well, can I say something?
Sorry?
Can I say something?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Thank you. We interviewed John Rain, but where's this Mrs. Eileen Dunstan popped from? Who is she? Where's she come from? Are we paying two people?
No, we're paying the price per hour, per person. And if you recall, in the interviewing process, the suggestion was, and I think it came from him, that when you were interviewing a woman, particularly, there might be preference that if you had a man or a woman doing the interview. And we agreed that at that point, that it would be preferable.
Sorry, what would be preferable?
That when you were having an interview at somebody's home, at the location of their choosing, etc., it may well be better if it was a man and a woman doing the interview rather than just a man.
So do we know anything about Eileen Dunstan then? Do we know
she has worked, she has worked with, I understand, with Professor Rain for the last 20 years.
And Professor Rain's one that said that he hadn't ever done one of these interviews before, that he hadn't done a survey on bullying before.
Professor Rain has got a very good reputation in local government research, which is what we wanted done impartially, away from this council, so that there was nobody knowing anybody.
Are we sure that we don't know any of this Eileen Dunstan, who nobody knows at all in this council?
I had never heard of it. I had never heard of it today, Janet. I don't know if anybody else had. Nobody else has mentioned that she's somebody's cousin, mother, relative, ex-boss, ex-employee, whatever. So I've no reason to think that she doesn't fit into the same category.
So you can say quite certain that she hasn't been compromised in any way?
I've no reason to think that she has. No reason at all.
I'm not sure what reason you had to think why the woman coming from the LGA had been compromised, but you said she had.
Sorry, which woman?
The one that was coming from the LGA.
I referred to the letter. I mean, I've no problem, we can discuss this all evening, but we've already made a decision on it, and I think it was unanimous. I can't remember, was it?
That was Night Owl, wasn't it? That was Night Owl, wasn't here, was it, David? Yeah, that's a...
Kane?
Can I just ask, it says that staff have been invited to share their experience working for the council in confidence by the 6th of April. Does that mean they would register to be interviewed or to speak to Professor Rain or by then, or is it that... As far as I know,
and not being a member of staff, I haven't received the letter as such, but from memory of seeing it when he proposed it, that was the date when the online survey would end. But I would have thought it was logical, and I have no evidence for this either way, but if you receive an online reply on the 5th of April... saying I would like to discuss with one or both, or I would like to on the telephone, or I would like to discuss on the telephone the option of having a meeting with you, it's unlikely to all be finished by the 6th.
So can I just check?
That, as far as I know, is the end date of the online survey.
So every employee of Rider District Council has had a link sent to a survey to carry out.
That is my belief. I haven't been doing it.
Right.
But as much as you can confirm it, yes.
I can confirm as a member of staff, everyone's had the link and sets out all the options that are available, and all staff who don't access email have had a copy of the same information.
Somewhere in there it said...
It's very clear about what the options are for you to follow by that date, yeah.
No, that's all right. I suppose the other... question has Professor Rain been asked to have any contact with members of council, not just staff members but councillors as well, in terms of his research or whatever evidence gathering that he is conducting?
No, he was asked to do a staff survey. In other words, what we had as a staff survey a year ago compared with the staff survey now.
He isn't interested in hearing from any elected members through the course
of his process. I suspect it depends where the staff survey takes him, or takes us. But he won't go off into any other direction without coming back to discuss with scrutiny. All he is doing at the moment is what it says on the tin, if you like. He is doing a staff survey with a follow-up of telephone calls, if in that staff survey people say they want to get a phone call from them. And if that follows up wanting a meeting, they can do that as well. And it's been done at a venue convenient or of your choosing, or some neutral venue, that was the word.
Is he interested in speaking to former employees of Rider District Council, or would that be something
that, again,
else,
is not part of a staff survey, but okay. Again, that is a route that could happen.
Right.
As far as, I'm not trying to avoid any answers, all I'm saying is he's doing stage one before stage two or three are either necessary or looked at.
I suppose the point I'm making is that while I think Professor Rain should have independence from this scrutiny committee, that at the same time we need to know kind of roughly what he's up to and what he's doing. Right. And
that is the delicate balance that Jeff and I have done our level best to achieve so far, that the councillor is paying him, so we don't want him to be doing something that the scrutiny committee doesn't want him to do. But on the other hand, he has got to be completely independent. And this means you're sitting here saying, I don't know what that date is, but I think logically it must be. Right? Because only the employees of the council have got that. Right? Is he going to do this to members? No, because there he's been given, he hasn't been given, because otherwise if you go to ex-employees back whenever, and members, whatever, and ex-members... And he's been given clearly defined terms of reference.
I mean, given that the staff survey has been finalised, completed, and now sent out, is it possible for the staff survey to be circulated with this committee so we can have a look at what the questions have been?
I will ask him.
Right.
That is the position.
Because we can have no influence over that now. It's gone.
No, I understand.
Staff.
I understand that. But then, taking your previous two questions, that, well, fine. We'll let you, you have to listen to the recording and try and or remember them. Your previous two questions would preclude that as a sensible report. They might not preclude it, but they could preclude it. And therefore, why would you do it? And this is the balance that Jeff and I have had all the way along. Of trying to, you know, get it right, whatever. And, you know, we've done our best, that's all I can say. But it is moving on, and it is moving on at the same date as if it feels like nothing's happening at the moment. Everything's happening in the second week of April, isn't it?
Can I ask something?
Sorry?
Can I ask something?
Yeah, sure.
The wording of this, it says, they've been commissioned to assist with evidence gathering. Who are they assisting?
It's not my wording, isn't that? You can't ask me. I know nothing. You had the email from Claire.
Sorry?
You had the email from Claire.
From Claire?
Claire.
Yeah, but here it says...
No, no, that's just describing what the email from Claire says.
They have
effect.
Been commissioned to assist with evidence gathering. Who are they assisting? They're assisting somebody.
Don't ask
assisting?
Me. It's not my wording. And that is describing in three lines, so that there is a record of it, what Claire has said. And I didn't write that. I have anything to do with it at all. Not a word. Claire did that, and I suspect nobody in this room had anything to do with what Claire did with that. I'm going to say, keep out, let me do the dirty work. Yeah. That's your wording, isn't it?
My interpretation of that is to assist the committee with the review. That
yes, exactly. I know what you mean. Yeah. Anybody else? Fine? Right, what's the next one? Review of assets. Has anybody any comments to make on, I think that's the next one, is it not? Sorry, what page are you on, Janet? There is a final report on that. And if you notice, and I remind Councillor Keel of this, that she asked me to clarify in great detail what kicking to the long grass meant. And I pointed out to her that I had no idea, but I was carrying the phrase that had been given to me. I suspect Councillor Keel's now got probably a more accurate picture of what kicking to the long grass means, but I could be wrong. When was it kicked? 21st of September 2017, and still out of sight. I'm sorry, Di, that's why I nudged you, that I thought it was going to be kicked into the long grass, and it would appear that long grass and kicking, whatever that means, is what has happened.
Can I just ask, as you've said, that referral was made on the 21st of September. Has the Constitution Working Party met since that date?
Not to my knowledge, but those are not the exalted circles that the chair of scrutiny.
But if something's been
anybody else moves in.
If something's been referred to a working party, is there any length of time in which it should be considered?
Or I think we'll find out. I was wary at that point, and this is why I said at that point, I don't know what they're going to do with it, but I don't like the sound of it.
Because
I was not in favour of it, but I wanted to make it very clear, which is why I handed it over to Di at that point, that my wariness in relation to it was not my opposition to it, was that I had heard that it may be kicked into the long grass.
I'm just thinking more.
And it still isn't my opposition. I'm quite happy to debate it any time.
I'm just thinking more broadly about the Constitution Working Party is, when did it actually last meet?
The last time you attended.
Right. So, because that meeting was stopped partway through with a view to it being reconvened to discuss certain items of business from that
meeting.
Which
we haven't got the minutes for.
But what I'm saying is it's not just this which is not come forward. It's a whole raft of things that were on the agenda for that meeting. God knows how long ago when we were there.
Yes, exactly.
And
if you'd like to participate and contribute to a scrutiny review as to what's happened to all this lot, I'd be absolutely delighted.
But I mean, I suppose the point I'm making is who convenes meetings of the Constitution Working Party?
I think that's above my pay grade as well.
Right.
I mean, various people have in the past, but tried to. But it's gone to the, to my knowledge, it's gone to the chief executive in the past. I don't know if anybody can give me any more information on that.
Well, I did ask the question, Mr. Chairman, and I was told I don't know when it's going to be convened.
At which level did you ask this, Councillor McKim?
I asked whether there was a regular pattern of meetings for the Constitution Working Party.
But it's regular. But it's
of, I think I can't remember. I asked one of the officers. I think I probably asked the legal team. I probably asked Anthony if there was a regular pattern, and I think it was just an ad hoc meeting that he's convened, but nobody could tell me when, which seems a bit of a farce, frankly.
It's Keane and I were at the last one, and farce was. Would be a pleasant description of it. I'm sorry. I mean, I don't want what has happened to that to have happened. Which is why I didn't want it referred there. Because I actually would like it sorted out. It's not going to get sorted out this year. And this council year. it may not get sorted out this year as such, but unless somebody suddenly gets a mad rush of blood, I can't see it being sorted out before May. Because there are, as somebody else said, there are things that are already, you said, that there are things in the that should be going to the Constitution Working Party that are ahead of that in the priority list. And the time list. So, I mean, it's on here. I was quite tempted when I saw it there to say to Di, oh, you can come and take the chair over for this one because it's before my time and it's going to be post my time as well. It's going to be, may even be measured in geological time. It needs something done to it. And if this committee wants to send me off to make me do something, I will do my best. But I don't think the powers that be will take much notice of it. I don't understand the reasoning. But I suspect it isn't the timing of meetings bit. I suspect it's not wanting the Constitution Working Party to. And as this is on tape, good, you can listen to it and come up. They might come back to us with the proper answers. I realise that's most unsatisfactory, and I'm sitting here feeling like the messenger that's about to be shot, but I haven't even got a message, so please don't. Die.
I mean, the other thing that's coming back to me is that I was also told that I should wait until such time as the outcomes of the peer review were worked on, and I've not seen those either, unless I've missed them. So I think it probably is something we should be taking up.
Okay, I'm happy to do it. What would you like? Okay, that's fine. I've no problem with that.
Think about it, Mr. Chairman, and not give you an answer straight away.
Right, that is astute. Can I suggest that you come back to me between meetings, so that, because when's our next meeting?
The 19th of April.
19th of April, which is very close. And I am quite happy to either bring it up in urgent business or to put it full blown on the agenda. But it needs to be in a position, I would have thought, not to be kicked down the road as a can or further into the long grass along with what's already happened to it. And any thoughts from anybody as to how we sort that out? I'm more than happy. Sorry. Yeah. I've nodded at him twice, but he hasn't taken any notice yet.
You would wish me to speak?
I do.
Thank you. I think I must have missed something important, because you were asked once or twice, who actually puts these things on an agenda? Who actually calls a meeting of the Constitutional Working Party? Is it a member, or is it an officer, and or a combination of all of the above?
The best I can give you is that my experience of a mere, I don't know how long it is here, Di, is it? We were both still at school when we first got on here. But it has been a combination of chief executives, leaders of council. I think those are probably the two main ones. I can't think of any other route, but it hasn't got a committee. If it's got a committee, it's got the committee, which is the Policy and Resources Committee. And then I would quite happily say, until the chair of Policy and Resources Committee's face, he's unlikely to call the scrutiny committee, he's unlikely to call the Constitution Working Party as a matter of urgency, as it was him that sent it to the Constitution Working Party in the first place.
I was just a bit troubled when you said that, because we don't have a chief executive and we don't have a leader of council, so it's making it a bit difficult.
Well, we have an interim chief executive who could, if wish to, but I know not in the past even whether that's been done by agreement with whatever politicians, but it certainly hasn't. I have never managed to, as a group leader, have never managed to do it, and I have no clue as a committee chair how I would just do it, and I'm looking to Di, who's more experienced than I have in committee chairing positions. I don't think chair of council might be able to, but you know, if Di doesn't know and I don't know, and it was put there to, and I now hold up inverted commas to use this without using the phrase again, it looks as though that is why it was done. It may not be, but it certainly looks like it. King. I'm not showing irritation and boredom with the discussion. I'm irritated and bored with a subject that's been there for so long and we aren't getting anywhere with it.
If the Constitution Working Party is not meeting in order to be able to discuss the recommendations this committee made to Policy and Resources, and Policy and Resources referred to the Constitution Working Party, might it be worthwhile that, given the length of time since then, that the Overview and Scrutiny Committee makes a direct recommendation to full council for them to make a decision?
I was considering, I don't know when next full council is, but I was considering, as the Chair of Scrutiny, asking the Chair of Policy at the next full council meeting.
12th of April.
There's probably, there can't be much between now and then, is there?
12th of April.
No, there can't be much in meetings between now and then. 12th of April's only a good fortnight away, isn't it?
It's the next meeting.
Yeah.
Planning and licensing on the
There's table. A planning and licensing, but it's the next meeting. The Chair of Scrutiny could ask the Chair of Policy if he could give us a progress report on how the Constitution Working Party is progressing. Is that suitable? That would speed it up rather than waiting till our next meeting and then deciding to do something. Did somebody make a note of that awkwardness that I've just... Sorry, that awkwardness that I've just suggested. Yeah, I'll give the committee my word I will do that. Yeah, I think progress report is probably the right word, because it would be rude to imply that nothing's been done since then. Is that legally safe? Now, where are we next, unless anybody wishes to thrash around the Constitution Working...
Drowning
in the Constitution Working Party, or drowning in the flooding? He's used subtlety and missed me. Flood management, anybody anything to say or add, or can we move on, please?
Just one thing. It says that a total of £32,000 has been awarded of the £50,000 grant fund. Is that through a lack of applications being received? And if so, is there any way that we might be able to encourage any unallocated money to make sure that it's spent on projects?
I'm going to hand this question over to Becky, but there's the devil's advocate part of me that actually says, do we want to spend a fund like that as quickly as we can by encouraging people, or do we want to make sure that people are really wanting it where it's really needed? But anyway, Becky.
Yeah, I mean, we have only had the three applications that you're aware of. We could issue a reminder, an appropriate time, just to remind everybody that there is still the fund available.
Council or through the website?
Well, when we launched the fund, we wrote to all the parishes so we could send a reminder through.
Or put it in the next parish liaison meeting?
The next parish liaison meeting is June, so we could mention it there, or we could do something before that.
Don't want to be too hasty.
Was it a one-off £50,000, wasn't it, that we allocated? So it doesn't matter if it's not for this year. I was just conscious if it was for one financial year, and that was
I think it's a pot rather than a budget item.
And in that case, it might be that if in a future year a particular flooding problem came up,
that was my response to you before we brought the expert in.
We can make a note to mention it at parish liaison as a bit of an update.
I think
just like we would the grant funds, etc.
Are you coming down to my view that maybe we shouldn't be marketing and we should just be seeing what happens with it? I don't mind.
On the one hand, it probably wouldn't harm to say that this money is available for parishes to access, but in terms of going on a massive marketing campaign, then. You know, that I wouldn't expect that, particularly if the money is there and can be spent when needed.
I think my understanding originally was it was a pot, but our expert on this, if you'd like to take the chair back again, Di, is you on this one. What are your views?
It's ongoing. So
it's ongoing. And what's your view on the... We should be running around to see if we can spend it where people want it spent, or have it there for when somebody needs it to do. Where do you sit
on
that?
Well, I mean, I think there are various parishes that we know that have problems. So maybe those are the ones that we should be asking, you know, if they have anything. I mean, I know of one other that is thinking about coming forward, but I think they've got to get their plans.
Who's thinking of coming forward?
Another group that's thinking, another scheme that's coming forward, thinking of
coming
forward.
So one of the other parishes is thinking along these lines.
But I think maybe if we could target the ones that we know that have ongoing problems, Becky, would that work?
I think, if I could just say that I do know the community offices are still working in some cases with specific parishes on this area of work, so I think that does happen through the community team. There are a couple of areas that I do know that they're working on now, so it is still happening, and perhaps there will be an appropriate time to issue a reminder if we feel like that's things are sort of dried up, pardon the pun.
And my personal, I wasn't going to declare an interest, but Cropton Parish, as far as I know, has got nowhere that floods except for our place. And that might sound like a prejudicial interest, but I can't see the parish getting excited about putting in a big scheme just to reduce the chance of our house flooding. Any more? That was the extra thought you had, was it? Right. Lovely. So that's floods. What have we got next? Review of assets. Anybody, anything they wish to add on review of assets? Sorry, Janice, I didn't... Your microphone's off.
Read Gazette. It was all in Gazette this week.
That was my thought, that in actual fact the real world is somewhat overtaking that review of assets now. Is there anything for scrutiny to be looking at or doing at this point? Nothing occurs to me, but that doesn't mean it's keen.
Only that has this, I suppose, the policy that we developed for managing our assets, how has it been drawn on in developing the proposals that we've got for the future of Rydale House and other projects to kind of rationalise our estate? How has it been drawn and has it been useful, I suppose, would be my only question.
I haven't compared the two. Were you chair, Di, when that was drawn up? Have you compared the scrutiny theory and the council practice?
No, I haven't, Chair, sorry.
No, it's not a question of... I mean, I looked at it and at a combination of that's too big a job, combined with I wonder if Di has, and you probably came to the same conclusion as I did. And I really don't think it's going to change a lot, but if it may well be worth a check through, and I'm looking at Becky here to see if it's worth a glance to see if that review has been approximately followed. I mean, nobody, a review and a proposed way forward isn't a blueprint and you have to. Has anybody looked at that to see how it compares with what we're doing?
Yes, when you look at the recommendations which were agreed in terms of the policy for management of property assets, the vision, policy and principles are as in this update report, and they are being applied to the work that's going on with the assets. Yes, very much so.
And the only half sentence I've got to add to that is that if we've got the site at Rydale House, I've always ever agreed with that, only if the portion is affordable. I've always said it should be affordable, full stop. But there we are. Tim?
The two things which strike me, which I'm far too young to have understood the early history, but I was delighted to see that we're going to have another prod at Wentworth Street car park. I thought that had been sort of parked up and forgotten about. I don't know the background to all this, but it seems that it's slipped in and it's reared its head again. Are we at risk with this rematch? That's one of the issues.
I don't think that is. unless we're going to re-review. This was looking at a review of the assets that we had, etc. I don't think anything that precluded us from some of us campaigned one way or the other. I can't remember which side Di was on, but we campaigned long and forever on Wentworth Street car park. But I don't think the review that was done by scrutiny precluded looking at that. It, in no way did it say we won't consider that as an asset. So, you know, and I don't think that that's what we're doing here now or will be doing. But we might have views ourselves into the process that's happening in relation to all the assets on Rideau. But I don't think scrutiny can do anything in relation to that, Bob.
And I'm not sure if we're going to be dealing with the information that's just arrived this evening or very recently from Policy and Resources. But I think the last time we inquired about Part A and Part B and so on, it seemed that it was understood that Part B items were Part B items.
I think that's the wrong item of the agenda. We haven't got there yet.
Right, that's fine.
I think, well, that's good. I feel better because at the beginning of this meeting, everybody was jumping on me, pointing out that two came before three and so on. You missed all that, King. At the beginning of the agenda, I couldn't. I was trying to do item three before item two and so on. I think we will find that what you're asking, Tim, is item 9 on decisions from other committees, policy and resources, which we're still wading our way through item 8 at the moment. Right, where had we got to? Anything else on assets? No, we can't do assets as such tonight. It's just, and I think Becky summed it up nicely, that the principles that were laid out by the scrutiny review are being carried out by the council. That doesn't mean the decisions are what anybody would agree with or disagree with, but that wasn't what scrutiny said. It didn't say do this and this. It said approach it in this way. Anything else? What have we got? Sorry.
It's just point 3 on this. It says when Rydell House is no longer available, meetings to take place in Milton Rooms and similar venues in Rydell. Has any work been done to find any similar venues in Rydell, or is it going to be in Milton Rooms? Full stop.
That'll still be looked at as far as I'm aware. Yeah, but I think the Milton Rooms has been mentioned as a preferred site.
I think it's in the policy papers of last week or the week.
Yeah, with it being one of our assets anyway. It's a council asset, so it's looking at the best use of that asset for the council, because we have the liability on that site still.
For only 940 years or whatever it is that's left now, it's rattling to a close. Anything else on assets? As I said, we're not preceding full council. We've all that lot to come then. No? Right. Flood management, assets, fuel poverty. There's nothing on fuel poverty, is there?
No.
Scrutiny review of members' involvement in outside bodies. Welcome, Simon. Would you like to outline this, bat on it, or whatever?
A brief outline.
That would be kind.
Going back to 2013, so a long time back now, there was a scrutiny review on outside bodies and also member champion roles, and the details of what council subsequently decided in March 2014 are included in the papers. Most of those points have been actioned. One of those points was repealed at a subsequent meeting of council, and there is a couple of ongoing outstanding points, which is why we're bringing it back to the committee tonight. One of the recommendations that came out of the original review was that member representatives on outside body produced a brief précis after the meeting to indicate what matters of key interest had been discussed and any decisions made at the outside body, and that would be published on the council's website. Although, as part of implementing the recommendations from the review, we developed a template for doing that and sent out a number of reminders to members, we have never ever received a single précis back of an outside body meeting. Presumably people think it's too onerous to do when it comes to implementing it at a practical level. That then has an impact on the subsequent recommendation, recommendation four, because the Overview and Scrutiny Committee was meant to undertake an annual review of outside bodies based on the information provided in the précis, and of course without that information there's nothing to review. So it's those two that are outstanding. So it's really, do members want to let that lie, or do they have views about trying to address those two matters?
Can I just ask roughly how many representatives do we send to outside bodies? How many outside bodies are there that we're represented on, should I say? Mm-hmm. And do any of those representatives receive remuneration for their time on the particular outside body?
Not got an exact up-to-date figure, but the list that goes to council for consideration is about three or four sides of A4, so I should think we're looking at maybe 30 bodies, possibly more. They don't all meet very regularly. Some of them it's maybe once a year, some meet quite often. And as I recall, the scrutiny recommendation asked for the independent remuneration panel to look at allowances for members going to outside bodies, because historically there had been one or two representatives who could claim an allowance, and I think, if my memory serves correctly, the remuneration panel removed those allowances, so I don't think anybody does claim an allowance for going to an outside body, just the usual travel expenses.
Tim?
I had a view on the failure of hospitals to provide paperwork explaining why a patient attended and what happened to them and all the rest of it. And my feeling was that if they didn't send a letter in a timely manner, we shouldn't pay them because the patient hadn't attended. So I would extend that to, if we don't get a feedback, then probably there was no attendance.
That sounds superb, but we don't pay attendance as it is my understanding.
But you pay allowances.
Travel, but if they, you know, it could be worth it. I'm not sure whether monitoring travel as a punishment is worth the cost of it doing it would be more than the cost of the travel, would be my guess, but I could be wrong.
And surely you can't claim to travel to a meeting if you haven't gone to the meeting in the first place.
It depends whether the meeting you're talking about, a meeting or a report. Were you talking about going to the meeting?
I was talking about the report as evidence you've been to the meeting.
Yes, but if they haven't been, Keane's right. You've not much point in withdrawing the money they haven't claimed. And we haven't had reports, to my knowledge, from anybody in the last couple of years, if not three.
But does that mean they haven't been, or that they've been and not sent in a report?
I don't know what records are kept of attendance.
There aren't any formal records kept of attendance because we don't know whether members have been, and the précis was part of the means of trying to gather information about that. The outside bodies themselves might include information as to who's attended, particularly if they take minutes of the meetings. Those minutes aren't always publicly or easily available, though. So I suspect there may be a combination of some people haven't been to the meetings and some people have been to the meetings and not completed the PROCE.
Do you have any idea of how many people have claimed travel?
I wouldn't like to put any figure on it, but some people do claim travel expenses for outside bodies.
The other thought I would say, just in terms of coming to a conclusion on this, is if we've got such a long list of outside bodies, sometimes people don't actually want to be on the outside body, and it's a scrap around to try and get a representative from the council to be on the outside body, which on the one hand you might say we shouldn't really be applying too stringent monitoring or regulation if a member has taken on to be a representative when no one else has wanted to. On the other hand, you might say that the fact Rideau District Council might like to consider which outside bodies it's sending representatives to, so that actually we're making the most impact and that members still think that those outside bodies are relevant to Rideau to have a representative. So in terms of answering the question about what we do on this particular point, I don't know, but perhaps we need to start looking at which bodies we actually send representatives to as a potential answer.
I'm a little disappointed with Councillor Duncan on this one, because I think if he checks back through several annual councils, he will find that it has been very party biased, and he will also find that the attendance problems have been very much with one party, if there are problems. The taking of places have been very much with one party, and this scrutiny committee under Robert Wainwright's chair, I think, yes, did a brilliant report. It actually asked for people to come along with qualifications as to, you know, experience and whatever. It didn't necessarily written qualifications as to why they should be on a body. They had to explain to council why they wanted to be on the body. And the report, and that lasted for 1 year nearly, and then we abandoned the people speaking as to why they wanted to do it or stating what experience they got, etc. And then you ended up with a picture that you described, which I found very disappointing, accurate, but still disappointing, that people are on those bodies but don't want to be. And I think that may well have a political influence to it, because there's been lots of the cap in Kirby is one. Two people wanted to be on it. The attendance record might be 100% from whichever one that got there, but there was people wanting to be on it. So I think it needs a little bit more checking what has happened with that, as to who stood and who got elected, because it's those that got elected of whichever colour or whatever that have not done the reports. Now that's one thing, and that's me coming back from a lot of years of experience of it and watching it and whatever, and it's not a criticism of you having seen one. Tim's one of stopping travel expenses. We don't often disagree, but I think it is fits in with the whole lot. If you're going to do some of this, it needs to be monitored, and I'm not convinced that it's worth the cost of monitoring it. It's your view, David, because you've been on some outside bodies for some considerable time, and yeah, exactly. I think you do, sir, and that's why I'm asking what your view is on the principle, because I think most people...
anything like that that aren't anything to do with the
yes.
land and such like.
I said blowing my own trumpet, but I think we've done a tremendous lot for Malton and the area all around.
How would you feel about having to do a report? If
I can't see any problem if that's what you want us to
do. No, I'm not asking, but I'm just asking what you feel about it.
Usually we have, they take minutes at these here meetings, and there's nothing to stop. I would have thought those were being passed around, duplicated and sent out. Without the chairman doing a report on it. I think it's the outside bodies. You must put somebody on that is knowing what they're doing.
Can I try and find a route through this? And I haven't given it a lot of thought because I didn't realise it was arriving till not long before it arrived, as it were. I don't think there was any point in changing anything with 1 year to go to the new council when most of the appointments are made to outside bodies. And to say to somebody who has done a good job on there for 3 years, by the way, if you don't attend, you won't get your petrol money, or to say to somebody, you've got to do a report, even if the rules say they should have done a report, I don't think now is the time to do that. And I think it probably would be a good idea if scrutiny from May onwards, with input from Simon and whoever else wants to put input into it, had a fresh look at this, and it was all drawn up and polished from experience gained, ready for the following year. So that the training of new councillors turning up, because I think this happened after the influx of new councillors last time, or around it and so much on top of it that they didn't get trained in it, so that new councillors would be trained that if you were going to go on to an outside body, you would have to this or wouldn't do that or whatever else. So I don't think it's something we need to, in what looks like a very busy end of the year for this committee, ought to take any further. But equally, I think it's something that ought to get tidied up, ready for the new council. And I will propose that, if there's support for himself. Before I ask for a seconder, does that sound like a sensible approach? Di, you've... Janet?
Yeah, I think this one's looking into, but like you say, with in new council after May, definitely, yeah, because they'll be all different councillors and people will come on and off outside bodies anyway, so I think it wants looking into after.
So scrutiny to look at it after May, ready for, getting it ready for the new council the following May. Yeah. Anybody got any thoughts against that idea before I ask for a seconder? No? Anybody willing to second it? Thank you. Are you happy with that, Simon, just before we take the vote? Yeah, I mean, seriously, because you're the one that will be doing the work with it, and I don't want to be throwing something at you that you leave here thinking you haven't got what is sensible. No, you're happy with that? Lovely. Thank you. So, can you please vote? Yet another unanimous, it seems to be, that sort of an evening. It's a bit disconcerting. Right. Well, that completes item 8, I think. In which case, we now move on to item 9. Which is Policy and Resources Committee held on the 15th of March. And you were already batting on that, Tim, before now, so I think you can have first bat on it this time.
Thank you. Well, as I say, it's exciting to perhaps be at the start of another Wentworth Street car park episode. But I think the thing for scrutiny committee to consider is Part A and Part B items as to whether they go to full council or not. Because I understand that there's been a change in the nature of the item, in that it went from a part B, which would have gone to full council, it was converted into a part A item, so decided in Potsdam Resource. Am I right in that?
Can I, having given you the chance to have first bat, now point out to you that the goalposts have been moved? And I hadn't spotted the goalposts had been moved, but I asked for them to be looked into and checked. And if I understand it correctly, it was described as a part B item on the front of the paperwork, but in the report itself it was described as a part A item. How that's happened, I don't know. I've asked people to look into it, and we don't need to know tonight. But there has been a mistake made. So if to start saying you knew it was a part B item and you've changed it into a part A item would be A, unfair, and B, maybe horribly inaccurate. So on that basis, if you wish to listen to the recording of the PNR, you will actually find some comment at the end that was declaring war on this committee, but I have on behalf of the committee decided that we'll ignore it on the basis that there was a confusion between the A's and the B's, because our action last time will, I think, go home. So on that basis, I don't think we have anything to do on this. But thank you for raising it, Tim, and yes, exactly. And my thinking exactly up until today, that, hello, they've taken no notice of us at all. And they actually pointed out that they weren't going to take any notice of us, but it's there in the paperwork as a confusion, in which case I don't think we should bat on it. Is everybody happy on that? Right. I will now seek guidance. Are we now into moving exempt? Or anything else to do?
Is there any other business, which was the affordable housing?
Yes, we have some dates on that. Any other business or urgent business or any other business the chair considers to be urgent? And we thrashed around one or two debates. One of the things that got put off that was going to be designing to make sure everything for this year ends up right at the end of the year was the affordable housing one that was discussed in the members' training on scrutiny, was it? You were there. Well, it was members' training on scrutiny. Yes, it was. And we had with housing a red warning coming up. And Gary Housden very kindly pointed out, because normally we find out that the housing target has not been met by the time we get to July, and we find out that up till April it hasn't been met in the following July. Gary Housden told us this time in October, told group leaders in October, that it wasn't going to get there this year by a chunk. And we asked for him to do a report for scrutiny, and it was all going to happen in February. But unfortunately, two things have happened. One, there's a consultation on the MPPF, and two, resources here are not as much as people would like them. Now, we would like them to be, and therefore that date couldn't be met. And we have now a date proposed, have we, Becky, for a members' briefing?
Yes, it was discussed and agreed that we would try and do a member briefing for all members on both the consultations, which the date that we were looking to do that would be a Wednesday, the 18th of April.
And that's MPPF and affordable housing.
Yes.
On the...
The briefing's designed to take place before we need to put a formal response into both the consultations that are running. Which would then go to planning in May. So we're trying to fit something in so members knew about the consultations, the impacts of that, before a decision's made on the consultation.
And had we got somewhere where we're going to put Gary's report on affordable housing as such?
Yes, and then it was then to put in an extra scrutiny committee on the 9th of May to then look at the affordable housing report. So it's really just to see if those dates were suitable before we share with the wider members.
And there is another issue, there's at least one other issue, and that is that we may decide that we're going to do a working party or whatever on the swimming clubs. We may not, but if there may be, because everything's piling itself into the end of this year, it may be sensible to have a meeting there to be able to put something else in as well if necessary, because we've the two big reviews still going.
Didn't we say we might add a task group to the audit committee on the 12th?
Yes, that's thank you, Becky. And on the 12th of April, which is just after the swimming clubs come back, we've got the audit committee, which is why we suggested to full council this year that it should be named as neither audit nor scrutiny. We're suggesting that we put a task group meeting on the swimming clubs on the 12th of April. Does that fit with your approval? So rather than have to have a separate meeting, we put it in with the audit on that night.
Yeah, it was quite a light agenda.
I think it was a light agenda, but a week ago this looked like a light agenda, so I'm not going to say that again. Right, everyone happy with that? Is that the right way round now, everything for the recording of the swimming clubs? Is that seconded? Thank you, Di. Please vote. Got everybody? Lovely. That's unanimous. Thank you very much.